Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to another episode of The Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network, with your host, as always, Kevin Cunningham. It's definitely been a while since I've done one of these shows, but nonetheless, obviously I apologize for that, but these shows will start ramping up again regularly, starting today, obviously. But football season's done, and that talk is pretty much done until August, unless you're talking about off-season stuff like the NFL draft or recruiting in general for the 2016 season. National Signing Day is over for college football. So it's pretty much all basketball from this point on up until August-ish. And that's when people start diving into, you know, training camp and the pre-stuff for the college football season as far as position battles and whatnot. But this show, The Basketball Truth, all about basketball. And the NBA season is pretty much 50 games or so in the books. Most teams have 30, 31, 32 games left to this point in the season. So, you know, over half the season is over. And basically just going to be going over the Western Conference today in the NBA. And, you know, what teams have surprised at this point, what teams are leading the conference, what teams have absolutely no shot, what their future looks like, stuff like that. And in general for the Basketball Truth as well, got to point out that we do college basketball stuff. I blogged about college basketball over on the redlightsportsnetwork.com, which is also the home site for the Red Light Sports Network, which hosts all of our podcasts and blogs regarding any sport. But I just talked about this past Saturday and the number of games that go on, because typically with college basketball, Saturdays are extremely busy. I think it was like 20 of the top 25 ranked teams in college basketball played on Saturday. So got a little blog up on that, just a little thing about each team, what happened on Saturday. So, again, all of our stuff over at the redlightsportsnetwork.com. And you can also click on the DraftKings logo near the top right, which helps you if you are a gambling person or just a person in general that wants to liven up the stakes for basketball season, because people know that the NBA season is long, as well as college basketball. But DraftKings has, you know, whether it's free games or games that are worth a quarter to throw in, you know, you don't have to be a high-stakes roller to participate in DraftKings. I actually just did over this past football season, and my experience with it was great. You know, not just because I won probably $50, but, you know, even the timing of the payout, some people are worried about that with sites that deal with not necessarily gambling, but just sports betting, fantasy lineups, just sites like that in general. You know, I got my payout within 2 weeks of asking for it. So definitely a legitimate site. Otherwise, we wouldn't be promoting it here at the Red Light Sports Network. But getting into NBA stuff, just to roll through the Western Conference standings, Golden State's still in first. They're ahead of Memphis by 3 games. And then Houston's in third, Portland 4, Dallas 5, Clippers 6, San Antonio 7, which I think is probably still the favorite, honestly, to win the whole thing. Phoenix 8, New Orleans 9, Oklahoma City 10. We'll definitely get into those three teams a lot during this show. Denver's at 11, Sacramento 12, Utah 13, Lakers 14, Minnesota living at the bottom of the league at 15. Well, bottom of the West. The New York Knicks are actually statistically the worst team percentages go for winning percentages. They are 10-41. Minnesota is 11-40. So they got them beat by a whole game. Obviously, that can change. But with the Western Conference, I mean, looking at the top, Golden State, I watched the Golden State-Atlanta game. When was that? I know it was last week, but I can't remember the day exactly. Might have been like a Friday or something. I don't remember. But Golden State went to Atlanta and hung with them, but ultimately Atlanta came away with the win at home. They shot the ball ridiculously well from three. They're a good three-point shooting team to begin with, and obviously Kyle Korver helps you when he's shooting 53% from three, which is absolutely insane. But Atlanta's a good shooting team to begin with, but they went insane against that game against Golden State. So, you know, at Atlanta, it's a regular season game. Yeah, it means a little more because it's between the top two teams in the league, but you can only take so much from it. I think it helps solidify for those that, well, to an extent, those that haven't seen Atlanta much this year and how legitimate they are, that, yes, the best team in the Western Conference, the amazing Western Conference, they can beat them. And I forgot what the record is. Well, actually, I can figure it out right now. They are 14-4 against the Western Conference this season. So it's not as though they're just beating up on the East. They're 28-6 against the East. They're 14-4 against the West. So statistically, they're a little better against the East. Who isn't? But 14-4 against the West is, you know, anyone would be happy to be 14-4 against the West. I think that, let's see, now I guess Golden State has the best record in the West as far as games against the West. They're 25-7. But, like, statistically, 14-4 for Atlanta against the West. Memphis is 23-8. So you could extrapolate Atlanta's numbers to 28-8 as opposed to Memphis's 23-8. So Memphis is the 2 seed in the West right now. And they're 3 games ahead of the 3 seed in Houston. So Atlanta's, you know, not just beating up on the East. They're doing work on the West as well, which is ultimately what will matter if they want to win it all, because they're going to have to beat a great team from the West. Quickly, as far as the East is concerned, I think Atlanta has to be the favorite. Toronto's a good team. Chicago's a good team. Washington's a good team. Cleveland could be really good, depending on how they get things rolling, but I still would favor Atlanta, no question, in that series. Atlanta's way more experienced. They're always in the playoffs, and they're finally gelling together perfectly. So I think that Atlanta is certainly the team to beat in the East, but they're doing more than well against the West so far this year. So, you know, any talk about being legitimate, it just takes watching one of their games, or it takes looking up a few statistics, such as their record against the West. So anyone that doesn't think Atlanta is for real, it's just a lack of caring, and it's just an opinion to be thrown out there. But, yeah, Golden State, I mean, in the last 10 games, they're 7-3, so they're not exactly doing as well as they had been up until these last 10 games, I guess you want to say. But, again, they're still 3 games ahead of Memphis. And ultimately, I mean, for those questioning Golden State, they're the best team in the West by 3 games. To me, there's no question that they'll finish either 1 or 2 at the end of the season, because there's 6 games ahead of Houston, who's the 3 seed. Houston's not making up 6 games on Golden State in, what is it, 33 games left for Golden State. So that, you know, Golden State is insured a top 2 seed. Memphis more than likely is insured a top 2 seed, but Golden State for sure. So they're going to be there. They're going to hold home court up until the conference finals if they get there. And even in the conference finals, again, they're 3 games ahead of Memphis right now, so they would hold home court advantage there. So as far as their home record is concerned, they're the best in the league. They're 23-2 at home. So the notion that Golden State is purely an offensive team and that the play does slow down when it comes to playoff basketball, which is absolutely true. Just looking at numbers, the number of statistics or the number of possessions goes down in the playoffs as opposed to the regular season. Lineups get a little more crunched. You're not playing 9, 10, 11 guys a night. It can trim down to 7, 8, maybe 9, teams that use guys to give other guys spells during the regular season are kind of cut out. Those guys that average 5, 6, 7 minutes a game. Maybe it's down to 2 or 3 for a little stretch before a timeout, or they're just not used at all. But the depth, I mean, is a big factor when it comes to the regular season. I think Golden State's depth is incredible. Not to say that that's what makes them them, but it certainly helps throughout the regular season a lot more than people probably think. The other thing that floats around with Golden State is that if they don't hit their shots, then what are they? Because they're a jump shot reliant team. And, yeah, I mean, they are a jump shot reliant team, but at the same point, that offensively, they're absolutely ridiculous at what they do. So, yeah, they take a lot of jump shots, but at the same time, just looking at numbers, it's there's a reason why they take that amount of jumpers, because they make more jumpers than the average team does on a percentage basis. Effective field goal percentage is a stat they lead the league in. Atlanta's 2. True shooting percentage, they lead the league. Atlanta's 2. Offensive efficiency, Golden State is 1. The Clippers are 2, Dallas 3, Toronto 4, Atlanta's 5. Again, Golden State leads in that. So, yeah, they take more jumpers than anyone else, and it can get them in trouble if they're not hitting them. But if you're not hitting your jumpers, what team does well when you're not shooting it well? Get or miss it league for a reason. Teams get a certain amount of open looks. They get a certain amount of contested shots every game. There's rarely blowouts in the NBA by 30 points. Even if you win by 20 and you hit a couple extra threes that you shouldn't have, that's a 14-point game. And say you're at home, so it swings the momentum that way. Maybe it's a 9-10-point game. Maybe the other team goes on a run because they're at home. So, there are very few blowouts in the NBA. And a lot of that is just teams shooting like absolute garbage, and it's just luck. Some teams obviously play better defense than others, and so you get, over the course of an 82-game season, teams shooting worse against particular teams because they're great defensively. And with Golden State, that's also a thing with them, is defensive efficiency, they're 1 in the league. So the notion that they aren't that great defensively didn't get thrown out the water right there. I mean, it's numbers-wise, Golden State basically blows everyone else out of the water. Offensively. Defensively, efficiency-wise, again, even though they play at the highest pace in the league as well. The average game that Golden State is featured in has more possessions than any other game. And yet, defensively, even though their missed jumpers can lead to long rebounds and easy fast breaks for the other team, efficiency-wise, defensively, they're the best team in the league. So Golden State is for real. There's a reason why they take that many jumpers. You can see why over the All-Star weekend. It's not really up for debate as far as what they're like as a team. Offensively, they're great. Statistic-wise, defensively, they are what they are. And that's 1 efficiency-wise. As far as Memphis is concerned, they're the 2 team in the West right now. They are 3 games behind Golden State, three games ahead of Houston. Houston's the three seed. Memphis, again, is a team that's just coming on strong. 9-1 in the last 10. That's best in the league outside of Cleveland, which is also 9-1. So Memphis is in their groove. Mike Conley will continue to be an underrated point guard among general NBA fans. Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, they are what makes Memphis Memphis. With when you play great defense, you can hang with anybody. And that's essentially what Milwaukee is doing in the East. They're 28-23. They're the sixth seed. Last year, they were atrocious. This year, their number one pick, number two overall, Jabari Parker, out for the year. Doesn't really matter. Because defensively, they're getting things done. Golden State's the number one team efficiency-wise defensively. Milwaukee's number two in the league. So defense can do more than what most people think in the NBA. I think that most fans think that defense only means so much and teams don't play defense in the NBA, which is ridiculous. It is a longer season, and you get guys that are more focused offensively. But as far as team defense is concerned, Milwaukee is the team that plays it. That's why they're up there, as opposed to last year. And Memphis, defensively, they're a great team. And their bigs, conventional bigs, Zach Randolph can hit a jumper, but he's not a three-point shooter as a four. And then Marc Gasol is your traditional five. So, yes, spreading the court out and taking more threes is a legitimate tactic. At the same time, Memphis shows year in and year out that you can have two traditional bigs playing side-by-side in today's NBA and be just fine. Houston, they're the three seed, 35-16. Portland's 35-17. Dallas is 35-18. So those three teams are locked up close. With Houston, ultimately they're fine defensively, typically an offensive team. Portland, same goes for them. For me, with both those teams, James Harden gets a lot of the headlines, and I'm going to pull up his stats right now. But statistic-wise, he's a great player. At the same time, he seeks out fouls, and that's I don't want to say it's his game, but at the same time, let me see what he averages here. He averages 9 free throws per game, which is insane. He's a great shooter, no question. Shoots 87% from the line, 38% from three. He's a good three-point shooter. He's not Stephen Curry-like, like most people would probably assume he is. He's not. He's a 45% shooter from the field, which is good, but not exceptional. He's a very good shooter overall. I'm not questioning that. But at the same time, I do think he is somewhat free throw reliant and just getting in the paint and seeking contact. And so he's not my favorite player in the league, but you have to give him props for numbers like rebounding and assists. Assists have gone up every single year. 6 years ago when he came into the league, averaging 6.8 this year. Rebounds have gone up basically every single year except 1 year. He took a 0.2 dip as far as rebounds per game are concerned. This year is his career high, 5.6. So he's averaging 27, 6, and 5. Basically LeBron-like numbers. Because LeBron basically averaged 27-7-7 in his prime. You know, when you're averaging LeBron-like numbers, that's a good thing. You know, there's a reason why people bring up the debate of LeBron. As far as, you know, one of the greatest players ever, and comparing him to guys like Kobe and Jordan and just the greats in general, all you have to do is realistically look at the numbers of 27-7-7, because that's what he brings on a nightly basis. This year, a little down. So James Harden averaging 27-6-5, you know, and Houston's the, what were they, the 3 seed? Yeah. So, you know, James Harden MVP talk. I tend to lean Curry. Anthony Davis is certainly an option, and I don't think the LeBron talk is off base, because you see what Cleveland is without LeBron. And yes, his numbers are slightly down from his 27-7-7, but they're still ridiculously great numbers. Again, Cleveland with LeBron, Cleveland without LeBron. There's an enormous difference. So that's where I think those MVP talks for LeBron stem from, is just the difference he makes on and off the court for that team. But, again, James Harden, he's not my favorite player in the league. But you have to respect what he does. He is a great shooter. He's leading Houston to the 3 seed out west, averaging 27-6-5. That's my thing with Harden. Tatum is the 4, and again, it's another guy that, to me, I think gets elevated when it talks to great players in the league. Portland's the 4 seed, and I like Portland. I like a lot of their guys. I think they are a very solid team, no question about it. But Damian Lillard, all-star talks, is he an all-star? I think it was right that he wasn't an all-star to begin with, you know, because of guys coming out, now he's in. But, you know, the whole Lillard thing, for me, he's a great player. But I feel as though he gets overvalued. I have nothing against him. Again, I think he's a great player. I loved him coming out of college. I think he's going to be a great player in the league. And he has been to this point. But at the same time, people think he's this, you know, ridiculously good player, and I don't necessarily think that's the case. He's averaging 21-6 this year with 4 boards. You know, he's a scoring point guard, the classic scoring point guard. He is a great 3-point shooter. I don't doubt that. But his rookie year, he shot 36% from three. Last year, he shot 39% from three. This year, you would think it's around that same range. It's at 34%. So, I don't know. Shooting 43% from the field. He averaged 6 assists a game his rookie year, 5 assists last year, back up to 6 this year. Will he grow in that role? I'm sure he will. It's not as though he can't get better. At the same time, he is a scoring guard. And so to average 20 or 21 points a game, 6-7 assists a game, is probably what you're getting out of him. That's not a bad thing. Again, I think Damian Lillard is a great player, but I think he is overvalued by many. Again, another great shooter, 85% from three. Or from the free throw line, 85% from three would be pretty interesting. But, again, his three number is dipped, which I find kind of interesting. But Portland's not suffering because of it. They're the 4 seed out west. In the east, they'd be tied for the 2 seed. Portland's not doing too terrible. So that's my thing with Lillard. I like him, but there's a cap there. There's a ceiling. I think a lot of people like him more than they should if they understand what he is. With Dallas, they're trailing. Again, Houston's the 3 seed, 35-16. Portland's the 4 seed, 35-17. Dallas is the 5 seed, 35-18. Those teams, realistically, interchangeable. And the teams behind them are not far off either. But Dallas is the 5. The Rondo trade, I think that it will help them postseason time. Regular season, you give up a little of your depth for Rondo. And while that's probably a good choice in the postseason, regular season to see them as the 5 seed, when a lot of people thought they could be the 1 or the 2, doesn't really surprise me. I think talent-wise on the roster, they're as good as just about anyone. Golden State may have a little more. They're extremely deep. Time with Rondo to gel. Him being out these last few games hasn't helped. But come playoff time, I think Dallas will be just fine. They're a team that can win it all. I don't think Portland can win it all. I don't think Houston can win it all. There's a difference for me between really good teams and teams that can win it all. I think Golden State can. I think Memphis can. I think Dallas can. I think the Clippers can. San Antonio, still my pick. Oklahoma City, I'll get to them later. But seeing Dallas as a 5, it's just going to take time for Rondo to gel with them. And again, depth matters more in the regular season, which they lost in that trade to Rondo, for Rondo. And again, when they made that trade, they were the best team in the league. So, you know. Yeah, he helps them defensively. You know, he's certainly a better defensive point guard than Jameer Nelson. Again, that'll help more so in the postseason. But, I don't know. Regular season, it's just going to take time with them. Like it took Miami time, their first year together. Like it's taking Cleveland, their first year together. Rondo is, you know, not a whole team to bring together and try to figure stuff out with, but as a point guard, an elite point guard, it does take time to learn his playing style and learn the players around him to make them better, because that's what Rondo does, is make other players better. He doesn't make a team better because of him putting it on his back. He makes the players around him all elevate their level of play. So it's just going to take time. I think Dallas can win it all. But for the regular season, seeing them as the 5 seed, finishing that 3-5, 6 range, doesn't surprise me at all. Those teams are kind of the middle of the pack for me in the West, and they are, you know, standings. The Clippers at 6, 33-19. A lot of people think the Clippers are having a down year, which I don't think is the case at all. I think more people expected them to be better, to be in that 1-2-3 range. But at the same time, you know, looking at records in the conference against the West, they're 3rd among Western teams. While they're sitting at the 6th seed, they're 20-8 against the West. Houston's 20-11. Portland 17-11. That's an interesting number to me. Dallas is 17-13, which is even worse. But again, it's just going to take time because they're a different team with Rondo. But the Clippers at 20-8 against the West, they're doing well. They may be the sixth seed. They may be 8.5 back from Golden State. But, you know, if they climb to that 3 seed, wouldn't surprise me. They're only 2.5 back of Houston. Team that's on my list as that can win it all. From the East, I think Atlanta, Chicago, Cleveland can win it all if Cleveland puts literally everything together. And their defense just hits a stretch where they're playing extremely well defensively. I think Chicago could, even though they haven't been great to this point. Atlanta obviously can't. In the West, Golden State, Memphis. Houston, I don't. Portland, I don't. Dallas, I do. Clippers, I do. I think that they have the personnel, the talent in L.A. to win a title. It's just a matter of it coming together in series come playoff time. They've lost 4 straight. The second worst streak in the league right now. Denver's lost 5 straight, which doesn't really matter. Even in the East, New York, worst team in the league, has lost 3 straight. Clippers have lost 4. So they're, you know, it can take one streak to move you from 3-6. It can take one streak to move you from 6-3. They're a serious contender. Look at their roster and decide that. San Antonio sitting at 7, half a game behind the Clippers. The top 7 teams in the West, they are better teams than 8, 9, 10. And then there's a huge drop-off. People think Oklahoma City going into the 8th seed out West and making this enormous run. I think they can, but I would pick against them. If they get in, they're going to be the 8th seed. Because they're 6 games behind the 7th seed right now. They're not making that up in 30 games. So that's out of the question. They will be the 8th seed. They will play either Golden State or Memphis. And I like Golden State's offense more than Oklahoma City's. Their defense is more efficient. Memphis, certainly better defensively than Oklahoma City. And offensively, I think they have enough. So, Oklahoma City, to me, is still the team that will get that 8th spot, but they're only 2 games away from Phoenix, but they're going against Golden State or Memphis in the first round. That's where the road ends, to me. Before the season started, I thought if they got in, they could do serious damage. Against Golden State or Memphis, I think they lose that series. That's my thing with OKC. I know I kind of skipped over San Antonio, and I'm going to get to them in a second. I've got 10 minutes left in the show. But that battle for the 8th seed, Phoenix is 29-24. The Pelicans are a game behind, 27-24. Then Oklahoma City is 2 games behind Phoenix. And then the drop-off is Denver, Sacramento, Utah, Lakers, Minnesota. Those 5 teams make out the bottom of the West. That's not going to change the rest of the season. It's just in what order fighting for draft position. Well, odds for a draft position, realistically. Phoenix, New Orleans, Oklahoma City are those teams battling for the 8th spot. None of those teams will catch San Antonio in the 7th spot. They will not get that 7th spot, I'm sure of it, and none of those 3 teams will fall below 10. Those teams will make 8, 9, 10. as I figured to start the year. The West has the top seven teams, and then because of Westbrook and Durant's injuries, Oklahoma City's been limited to start the year, which has led them to be six games behind the seventh spot. So they're battling for the eighth spot all year long. I knew that would be the case. I knew that would be the case for New Orleans. I knew that would be the case for Phoenix. Those three teams just are where they are, and to me, it was clear-cut to start the year that that's what the case would be. And that's what's happened. I think Phoenix is capable of holding on to the eighth spot. I think New Orleans is capable of getting the eighth spot and sustaining it. And I think Oklahoma City has more talent than either of those teams. So they're my pick to get the eighth spot. Again, they're two games behind. There are 31 games left for Oklahoma City. There are 29 games left for Phoenix. So basically 30 games left. I think Oklahoma City can make that two-game deficit. If they don't, that'd be pretty... devastating. I think that next year would be their year to put up or shut up. And if they don't win a title, I honestly do think Durant leaves. I do. If by next year they don't win a title, they can look back and say that they didn't even make the playoffs, potentially, a couple years ago, be this year, looking ahead. And then the next year, again, next season is everything to me for OKC and what their future looks like. But I do think OKC gets that eighth spot. San Antonio in the seven right now doesn't really matter to me. With San Antonio, I think they are still the team to beat. They're 32-19. Golden State is 40-9. I still think San Antonio is the best team in the league. Maybe I'm stupid for thinking that. Maybe I'm crazy. But thrown out the window, come playoff time, I think they will be healthy come playoff time. That means you're getting pretty much the same team you're getting from a year ago. They basically brought everyone back from a year ago. I think their team basketball can beat a Golden State. I think they can grind with teams like Memphis. I think they can beat heavily offensive teams like Houston and Portland. To me, San Antonio is still the team that comes out of the West. I thought it would come down to them in Oklahoma City. I'd be surprised if OKC gets to the Western Conference Finals. I think it would be great if they did. Be cool to see. But San Antonio sitting at the seventh spot, they're still the team for me to beat. About 5 minutes left here. Again, the standings for the West right now, Golden State's 1, Memphis 2, Houston 3, Portland 4, Dallas 5, Clippers 6, San Antonio 7, and then the teams battling for the 8th seed, Phoenix is 8, New Orleans 9, Oklahoma City 10. And then you got the bottom of the West with Denver, Sacramento, Utah, Lakers, and Minnesota. Those five teams just might as well be pushing for a better percentage at getting a higher draft pick, realistically. That's pretty much my thoughts on the West. As far as those bottom five teams are concerned, I think that it has to be, there was a report that George Karl was a serious candidate for getting the Kings job. Because the Kings are probably going to be looking for a new coach. And DeMarcus Cousins, there was a report that he said he basically doesn't want George Karl to coach the Kings, which holds weight because DeMarcus Cousins is the backbone of the Kings, and rightfully so, averaging 23-12 and 1.7 blocks per game. Just for a comparison, 23-12, 1.7. Anthony Davis, 24-10. 2.7. DeMarcus is a little better rebounder. I like Anthony Davis's ability to step out more, but DeMarcus is more dominant closer to the basket. Anthony Davis is better defensively. That's why I mentioned, Anthony Davis for Player of the Year. New Orleans would certainly not be in the group of teams vying for playoff spots out west. There are only certain teams that can do that. There are 10 out west, which seems like a big number. But even if you look at the east, you certainly have to be above 500 to be a contender out west, and there are 6 teams in the east. Charlotte would have absolutely no chance. Milwaukee would be one of those 3 teams looking for the 8th spot. Cleveland would be very interesting to see Cleveland, what they do out west for a season. Right now they're 13 and 11 against the West, which again is basically what it's actually better than Oklahoma City, but percentage wise it's about on the same track as far as total win loss would be concerned. But so you have to be a good team to compete out west. I think that Anthony Davis is what makes New Orleans compete. I think he holds a bigger weight than DeMarcus Cousins does. At the same time, you're averaging 23-12 and a block and a half per game, basically. There's a reason why they listen to him. And some people don't like his troubles. Whether it's literally on the court or off the court, attitude-wise, he's a guy that's going to be a force in the league for the next 10 years. No question about it. He's actually shooting 50% from 3 this year as well, DeMarcus Cousins. It should also be said that he attempts 0.1 threes per game. So that's my little pointless stat for the day, I guess. One thing that actually is big to note, though, he does shoot 80% from the free throw line. He's basically improved every single year. He took a 0.01% dip 2 years ago to last year, but he's shooting 80% from the line. He's averaging 8 free throws per game. So, hacking DeMarcus Cousins, not the best option. He shoots 80% from the line. Offensively, he is extremely dominant. Shaq-like, not as good as Shaq, but he's Shaq-like. Close to the basket, he's as dominant a center as we have in the NBA today. I got to wrap up the show. It's been great talking about the West. Follow us on Twitter, at RLSN Basketball, for shows coming up. I'll certainly be talking about the East either tomorrow or the next day. It's been fun as always. Listen to Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network, with your host, Kevin Cunningham. It's been fun. Adios.